Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
So, a big congratulations to Nicolas Cage. He got married recently. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I'm getting some other breaking news. Oh, it lasted 4 days. He divorced and annulled her. He reportedly filed for an annulment on Wednesday after getting hitched to makeup artist Erica Koike on Saturday, the same day they applied for the marriage license. Things fell apart very quickly. The news of the wedding.
What are the chances they met that day?
Well, they hadn't, but that would have been great. The news of the wedding didn't even make it out before the news of the annulment made it out. So they'd been dating since last April. Nick's other three marriages did last a little longer. Alice Kim, 12 years. Lisa Marie Presley, 3 months. Patricia Arquette, 6 years. And you have to have a reason to get an annulment. I don't understand annulments, but anyway. We're all just supposed to forget that you were married.
So I don't know where he's like... I know he owed money, and so he has to make these bad movies in order to pay the man or the IRS or whoever, whatever it is. But is he clinically insane? I don't think
crazy like a fox.
this isn't a substance thing with him, right? It's not like he has a drug.
I think it's involved. He was enthusiastically a cocaine user, as I've heard. I think it's been
allegedly.
Well, I think anyway, I've heard stories.
Has there ever been any rehab or anything for him?
I don't know about that.
Well, you have to give a reason for that sort of thing. And he said that the marriage was a fraud because she didn't disclose the full nature and extent of her relationship with another person. He also says she didn't disclose her criminal history. And
it came out in the 4 days after the, yep. Honey, now that we're married, I have some things to tell
put
you.
Put a pot of coffee
Sit
on.
Down.
This is all according to TMZ. He justifies the annulment by saying they had such conflict in personalities and dispositions that are so deep as to render the two incompatible. There's pictures of them leaving the Bellagio of him, or her screaming at him and him just kind of defeated.
Maybe he just thought to himself, I'm not being Nick Cagey enough.
Yeah.
And then this whole thing happened.
They did say it was one of those things where apparently, you know, they're in Vegas and they're drunk and she's like, oh my God, you know what we should do? And he's like, capital idea. So it's not like they planned for this.
Well, I stand by National Treasure.
Yeah.
Those are fun movie.
We should watch some of those. Movies. We should watch some of Nick Cage's, like, you know, pay off the IRS movies that go straight to video or other countries, because they are interesting looking.
Yeah, I don't know.
If they're even movies at all.
I can't figure that guy out, but I have never had an interaction with him. My only thing was, had a few of these with a few celebs where you go... You try to find some common ground when you're interviewing them, and I realized he had a Lamborghini Miura, and I had a Lamborghini Miura, and I said, "Nick, you had a Lamborghini Miura." You know, there's all total 900 of them ever produced on the planet, so you're not going to run into too many people in line at the supermarket that had like a Lamborghini Miura. And I told him, you had one, I have one. And he went, okay.
What else
like,
you got?
I don't know. Like, it's such a weird thing. And then I never know if they believe you or they hear you or they're just them.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And you'd think those Coppolas would help out, but no, you've got to make those movies.
To color Nick Cage information, just to not necessarily indicative of anything, just so you know, he very good friends early on in the young, you know, up-and-coming days with Jim Carrey, another potentially insane person.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Again, but just color.
Yeah.
And also, he was addicted to drugs in his 20s, but never went to rehab or AA. He just realized it didn't work for him and stopped.
So it's been, I guess, sober drug. I mean, this isn't nutty drug-fueled behavior. This is just eccentric actor.
No. Yeah. So there you go. Congrats. Mm-hmm. And
condolences.
Are sorry. Yeah.
Also, you know, the part where you were... leading man, leading woman, this move where you're trying to hang on to your looks, you know what I mean, for a dude, man, We talk about the chick version of this all the time, like, oh, mm-hmm. too much plastic surgery and blah, blah, blah. The dude version of this is much worse.
It's ghastly.
It's much worse when the dude yeah. is hanging
yeah.
on
yeah.
to that look, when the hair's dyed black and they're getting some injections
or
and a little work
move.
Done. Mm-hmm. And it's like, had a flight attendant on the flight I just got off of who clearly was a dude trying to hang on to it a uh-huh. little too long. And it ends up looking creepy. Was the women don't look good. It's not flattering if you can see it, but they don't look sort of
ghoulish.
Creepy and ghoulish. Yeah. The guys take a turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I don't know if this has ever come up on Rotten Tomatoes, at least before me, but you know one of my favorite Nick Cage movies is? I mean, he happens to be in it. Mm. Old movie, Peggy Sue Got Married.
Oh, yeah.
I love yeah. that movie. Yeah. That's a good one. Time travel.
I'd say...
is that a Francis Ford Coppola movie?
Raising Arizona.
Know.
There is some,
oh,
yeah,
of course,
there is,
Raising Arizona.
It is a Coppola thing for some, because it was confusing. But yeah. I'd say Raising Arizona is probably his highest rated
one. I don't think you're getting an argument about that.
I love that goddamn movie.
Don't Sleep on Moonstruck.
Mm. Mm.
The Hand.
I didn't like the Cher, I can't, the nod, because she let her hair go gray.
Okay.
So it's like, oh, she's so bold. For what? Not dyeing her hair?
Ma'am.
All right.
So Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel plans to bill Jesse Smollett for the city's investigation into his alleged hate crime. On WGN Radio at the end of last week, Emanuel said the Chicago Police Department is figuring out how much it spent on the case. And once the numbers are in, the mayor says they will contact him and give him a bill. It's believed it's going to be about $130,000. But that's not all. Emanuel, who called the decision to whitewash of justice, said my recommendation.
Face off. Is 92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Sure is. No.
That is mind-numbing. Sorry, go ahead. Yes.
Wow. Yeah, he says...
Can't be higher than Raising Arizona, though.
No, Raising Arizona's got to be 90.
Raising Arizona's 91.
Oh! What? Face Off is 92.
Wow.
That doesn't make a lick of sense.
All right, sorry, go ahead.
They're going to basically, they possibly will be charging him $130,000, and he has to write in the notes section, in the memo section, I'm accountable for the hoax. Meanwhile, Jesse's lawyers are demanding an apology from the mayor for dragging an innocent man's character through the mud.
Jesus goddamn Christ.
They should build those Nigerian brothers for pulling this caper off.
Someone's going to get a sit down with them, right? I mean, they got to be selling the story somewhere, right?
I would imagine
the
story's going to be pretty tasty.
We've established that they'll do things for money, right?
So that's on the table.
That's yeah. on the table.
And not
so
a ton of money.
Selling their interview.
A modest yeah. amount of money.
$3,500 to split.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll hear from them.
All right. Well, I'll talk to Garrigus about it.
Oh, please
figure
do.
It out.
So more Clooney news. We were just talking about Clooney. CNN reports that George Clooney has called for a boycott of 9 hotels because of their links to Brunei, whereas of this week, homosexual acts will be punishable by death. In an opinion piece he wrote for Deadline, Clooney decried Brunei's announcement that April 3rd, the country will stone or whip to death citizens caught committing adultery or having gay sex. He called for the public to join him boycotting these hotels. They're in the U.S., in the U.K., France, Italy. The two here are the Beverly Hills Hotel and the Bel Air in Los Angeles.
Oh,
so
speaking of
the rest of us high rollers, we won't be going to there anytime soon.
Yeah, speaking of Laurel and Coldwater turning into whatever and everything turning into whatever it turns into. Yeah, because Coldwater turns into Beverly there. Either way, the Beverly Wilshire and the Beverly Hills Hotel.
Yeah. And the Beverly Hilton.
And the Beverly Hilton. Can I tell you... I did upfronts for whatever. We did like a presentation upfronts or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Catch a Contract or History Channel or something. And it was at the Beverly Wilshire.
Mm-hmm.
And then about 4 months later, it was like, we're doing a second upfront, whatever, whatever. And it was like, it's at the Beverly. It's like, yeah, I know where it is. I got it. And I just pulled into there and valeted my car and like walked in. It's like, where is everybody? And then I'm getting to, where are you? And mm-hmm. it's like, we're at the Beverly Hilton, mm-hmm. not at the, and it's like, okay.
Pain in the ass.
Yeah. So we should boycott?
Yeah. Boycott.
All right. Well, done and done.
Yeah, I was doing it anyway.
Because I live in L.A., so I never go to any of those places.
And it is a classic example for you of, what year is it?
Yeah.
Brunei stoning to death people who are gay?
Also, what's in it for you? Like, how much money do you make stoning people to death? Like, it just
probably costs you money.
Feels like a calorie burner.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, you get a choice between whipped to death or stoned to death. I'll take stoned to death.
I don't know whose call it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And are they, like, I know we always talk about this is going on. This is going on in these countries. And I don't want to sound cynical. It's on the books. But is it going on? Like, are they whipping and stoning people to death? And also, what year is it? And also, I know we like to focus on what a hellhole we're living in and how oppressive it is for all people who are marginalized and everything else. But now that we've opened it up to a sort of global market, let's look around at some of these neighbors and see what's up with that. And could they have a percentage? Could they be homosexuality? Mm. I imagine it's got to be about the same percentage wherever you go. It can be celebrated, and you can have gay pride marches and stuff, but that's not going to make anyone gay. I'm trying to think. So it's probably as many gay citizens in these places where it's illegal as there are anywhere else.
Yeah, Brunei and Chechnya need to get their shit together. I know it's controversial.
Yeah, well, they say you can tell a nation by how it treats its gays. I got to work that one out. Yeah. But either way, George is right.
Yep. Well, Disney rolling out some big new bands coming very soon. So there's two that they're really wanting to get the word out about. One is smoking. That goes into effect as of May 1st. That's for Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Water Parks, ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex, and Downtown Disney.
It's going to be hard on the European tourists.
Yeah. Currently, all those locations have designated smoking areas. They'll all be removed. This includes vaping. The second,
why does vaping get lumped in with smoking? Like, I know we don't like the notion of it. Like, I had a talk with a woman about this once. She's like, these kids are all vaping. And I'm like, yeah. And then she's like, the nicotine's bad for them. And I'm like, nicotine's not really bad for you. It's like caffeine. Right. You know what I mean? It is. You don't want your kid strung out on it. You know, drinking two pots of coffee a day, but you'd rather have him do that than many other
a host of other things.
Than eating five chili dogs a day. I mean, yeah, okay. And in the world of vices, it's something, but it's not really bad for them. There's certain. So we've decided we don't like smoking or smokers, and then we've decided, I guess, because the smoke wafts over and gets to wherever, which is true, but people have been doing it for a long time, many, many years. But then the vaping, I don't know, feels like an alternative to smoking.
I have a theory on why they're banning vaping.
Hmm.
Because I think it's to keep because if there's a smoking ban and somebody's vaping and then some family starts going, excuse me, I have to find, I have to go talk to the manager. It's more headache to figure out, is this smoke? Is this vape? It's not going to be because of health issues. It's going to be because of other tourists complaining. And they'll just say, fine, if we see smoke, we're not having it.
In my never-ending quest for equality, when every one of these goddamn commercials is the guy's a buffoon and he's dumping the batter into the toaster and it's catching on fire, and the mom's got the nine jobs. She's a nurse. She's a doctor. She's a lawyer. She's walking the dog. She's going by Applebee's. And in that vein, and I was just watching. I was just sitting on a flight. And they've really upped their game in the pre-flight, buckle up, insert the whatever. And they're getting all fancy schmancy with American Airlines and all these. They're putting together these big productions and it's a lot of choreography and all that kind of stuff. Could we just one time have a woman doing something you're not allowed to do? It's always the dude. Yeah. Like, hey, no vaping. It's a dude. He's going for them. Because we're buffoons and we don't follow it. Just once. Just one time. The chick is the one who's leading the whole thing. Also, they're the ones who are dutifully doing what you told them
always
to do. Like, hey, put your baggage up and tilt it up, put it on its edge and slide it over your head. No vaping. Okay, dude, what about one rogue chick? Just one little naughty bitch who goes, you know what? I brought my vape pen. I'm going to get busy with it on this flight. And then we find her and go, no to you.
Yeah.
Is it 100% dudes on every single airline doing everything you can't do? And could we find one chick?
That's true.
Oh, this is going to Chris.
And hold on. In the pantheon of people getting drunk and out of control on airplanes, I got about 50-50 with the chicks and the dudes.
Oh, yeah. There's another one that just came
out. Plenty of chicks having a couple cocktails and getting a little mouthy with their seat partner or getting into it with the dude or with the pilot. It's pretty equal here.
So
can we just have one of these training videos, just have one chick doing one thing wrong?
There used to be. Virgin America, I think they were the first ones to have a safety video and had the choreography and all the crazy. I flew this goddamn airline so much, I remember the song very well. Ooh-wop. Anyway, there's one where there's a girl, a woman who's smoking, and like a kid. Yeah, shoo-wop.
There's
and
a...
I think the woman is smoking, it's in the middle, and the kid, there's like a kid who like takes her cigarette away or something.
Is this the one with the nuns on the plane?
Good.
Yeah, this
good
is the one with the
Virgin.
Nuns.
All right.
But they're gone now because they got bought by Alaska.
Because they had a woman smoking.
This is literally no longer shown anywhere. Find the one with a black kid sitting on a woman's lap. It's towards the middle.
Can't have a black woman smoking.
But no, it's a white woman, black kid. They're very tongue in cheek, but.
Okay.
I think she's either smoking or doing something wrong because he like pulls a cigarette out of her hand or something.
Oh, yeah. She can't put it to her lips. But either way. All right.
That's what you're asking for. It's gone. It's gone. We can't have nice things. Bring it back, Alaska.
Alaska.
Well, the other ban is strollers. Check those stroller sizes. No more stroller wagons.
Can I say this?
No more stroller wagons,
and they have to be a smaller size.
They may want to ban smoking for the general public, but they should force some of the folks that work there to smoke because those women are getting big. And in terms of your health, you'd rather have them smoking than morbidly obese. All right, we got the black kid.
Yep.
Okay, that's so cool from that movie.
It's important for all you smokers. All you smokers.
Parenthood.
So don't you forget. Don't forget.
Well, look.
Prohibits tampering. Oh, she's a vapor.
So what? Smoke detectors, so she's smoking.
That's true.
You asked it, and
you got it. You produced.
Doesn't exist anymore, but it once was a thing.
There was a woman with a vape pen. Thank goodness. Mm. But now we've gone wrong.
Now nothing.
Gone off a cliff. Yeah, you got one more?
Sure.
Wait, we done with that?
Everybody
start
good?
Smoking. Lose that weight.
So Tom Hanks is reportedly in talks to play Colonel Tom Parker in an Elvis biopic.
Ooh.
Yep. According to Variety, Baz Luhrmann will direct this as of yet untitled film. And, you know, Hanks brings this A-list appeal, but Luhrmann wants a newcomer to be cast as Elvis, doesn't want somebody we already know. So Parker discovered Presley when he was just an unknown, quickly moved in as his lone representation. Parker was responsible for various milestones like the record deal with RCA, his acting career. And I don't know if we've talked about it on this show, but isn't it true that he was the reason Elvis never toured overseas? Because he was like, he had some trouble with the law and couldn't leave the country.
I think he was a very, not to address that, but I think the Colonel was an addicted gambler.
Oh.
And I think he gambled a lot in Vegas. I don't know how to do with travel, but he took a lot of Elvis. And then he just told Elvis to, you know, do a million movies because he was his. It's kind of a weird thing because I've been in this position. Everyone in show business has been in this position. The person that's booking all the dates, who's getting 10% of everything, is like, yeah, more dates. I could go more flights, more travel.
More
you could hit this date on your way back from that date and stuff because for them, most of the time, oftentimes, they're staying at home and that 10% is rolling in. But he didn't take 10%. I mean, he was 50% or 30%.
Yeah. Yeah, he was so he gambled a ton. He took between 25 and 50% of Elvis's earnings.
He was trying to double it.
And when Elvis died, he owed the Las Vegas Hilton $30 million. And supposedly throughout his career, he made over $100 million with Elvis. And when he died, he was worth $1 million.
Wow.
Jesus.
A lot of gambling. All right, let's bring it home, baby girl.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Cast for a ledge. Stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Cast for a ledge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure. Keep those metal parts from getting their power robbed by rubbing on each other. Three times,
fool!
Stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. They did a test with five W30 weight grade and viscosity grade, and Three times. Stronger. Three times.
How many times?
Three times.
Three times, fool.
Castrol Edge, everybody. All right. I got a little one-on-one with Emilio Estevez, who brought me chili. He made chili, and he brought chili with him.
That's such an Emilio move.
I know. And he was a delight, and we will play that right now.
Tuesday, April 2nd in downtown Los Angeles, Corolla Drinks presents the 10E Booze and Book Club with Buck Storm and the Miracle Man. The Holy Mount Moriah United Pentecostal Church of God suffered a lack of attendance, probably due to the heat, but that fact seemed to be lost on the Reverend Whitey Hicks. The little man strutted around the stage like a bantam rooster. Hop, shuffle, hop. Hallelujah. Shuffle, shuffle. Glory to God. Glory to God had to be a favorite. He rolled it out slow, one staccato syllable at a time, and lifted his voice a little with the word God, so that the whole thing landed somewhere between a statement and a question. Glory to God? Come on out and hear me read like a preacher. Plus, stick around for a live performance from Buck Storm. The event is free, but please register on the events page at adamcarolla.com. The Miracle Man by Buck Storm. Get the audiobook on iTunes and Audible.
In studio with Emilio Estevez. I'm a big fan. Thank you for coming in. The Public is the name of the movie. It's in theaters tomorrow. Tomorrow, Friday, April 5th. Emilio wrote, directed, and stars in it. Alec Baldwin, dear friend, is in this thing as well. Many other notables. Congratulations on a great film and also on evolving into a director and a writer and going past the Mighty Ducks and everything else.
I mean, you've done it. You've directed before. You write. What do we call us? We're multi-hyphenates.
I guess I just think of what's next. I don't really think about what I'm doing or what to label myself. But I do, and I can't remember if I've ever talked to you about this or not. But Judgment Night came on the other night. Mm-hmm. I watched the entire thing,
right?
And I was an extra. I was a stand-in on Judgment Night.
You're kidding me.
From 1993 or four, whenever two, sure. three or four.
Yeah, it was four, I think we shot that partially here in LA and then in Chicago.
Right. So Adam Carolla, when you're filming that, is 29, 28, 29, comedy career going nowhere, swinging a hammer as a carpenter, teaching boxing classes like in the morning or something, and my buddy Robbie Levine is working as the second AD.
Okay.
And he says, I got you a dream gig. And I'm like, what is it?
Right.
And he's like, stand in for one of the bad guys on Judgment Night. And I'm like, how does that work? Now, when you do construction your whole life, or you teach boxing or whatever it is, there's no granola bars and there's no sitting down,
right,
and there's no taking a nap while someone else sets up or anything. And it's like you get $110 a day and they feed you and you barely have to do anything. And I'm like, I'm in.
I want that job.
So I showed up, and all because you guys would shoot out of order, whole thing was like, I just want my guy to die last. Not last in the movie, last in the order that we film, so I get as many freebie days here as possible.
No, were you standing in for Everlast, or were you standing in for Dennis Leary? Do you recall?
I was standing in for, I don't even know the actor's name. He had long hair. He had long hair and was 3 inches shorter than me.
Michael Weissman? Was that it?
Was it Weissman?
I think it might have been.
I don't, so what happened? And then it's all Emilio after this, but I've just been dying to tell you this for a million years. So what happened is I was just an insider. Like the guy who did Dennis Leary stand-in looked just like Dennis Leary. Right. All the guys look, because you have to have the same hair, the same coloring, the same height, because we have to light you and
figure it all out.
It
helps a cinematographer out a great deal if there's some continuity. Right.
The very first day I worked was when you guys shot in Chicago or whatever. You came back to L.A. We're shooting in, like, downtown L.A. We're in this at night. They were lighting this back alley boulevard kind of thing. And the guy's like, second team in. And everyone came walking in and everyone looked exactly like the person they were filling in for. And then there was me. I was like, short hair, right. 6'2".
Right.
And the lighting guy, he just looked at me and he went, and he did one of those like, all right, whatever. And he like right. walked away and that was it. But I remember that the stars didn't want to talk. The bad guys didn't want to talk to the good guys.
Right.
And then the bad stand-ins didn't want to talk to the good stand-ins.
That's
it was
right.
crazy, right?
That's right. No, they set a tone that we were going to be opposition and foes throughout the entire production. And so I filled, I think, Dennis Leary's trailer up with smoke, with some special effect smoke. And he didn't think it was too funny. And so he tried to exact some sort of revenge. And mm-hmm. I think it was a miserable failure. But yeah, it was back and forth like that quite a bit throughout the production.
I'm just going to go out and say he's a douche because you're a nice guy. But I was just sitting there watching everybody going, what, God, I hope my character doesn't get killed off.
Do you remember, was I nice to you? Did we ever chat on set?
I dared. I mean, the chasm between you and I at that particular stage in our careers, and when I say career, I didn't have a career. So you had a career. Right. I had no career. I would have never in a million years approached you or said anything to you because I would have, I didn't assume you were mean. I would assume that someone would yell at me for talking to you. That's the way.
Well, you know, and sometimes that happens. Sometimes the background artists or second team, as they're often called, are instructed not to chat with the A team, and I don't agree with that. I think making a film and you've made them, you've directed. You know, it's a community effort, and everybody who comes to the set may have a good idea.
I agree.
So I think that does. You know, I think the term "it takes a village" is overused. However, I think in the case of making films, it is a community. It is a village that takes getting that film from script to screen.
Are you I would have just approached you and went, hey, man, we're out of granola bars. You have anything in your trailer? It was mind numbing to me that I got paid to eat.
Right.
And
right.
that you could take a nap.
Right.
Like they go, I'm probably not going to need you for like 2 hours. I go, right. I can take a nap. Wait, I'm going to eat a granola bar and then I'm going to take a nap. Like
right.
It was insane because in construction, if you sit down, they yell at you.
Right.
And so it was, right. It's insane that you could do it.
Well, just to share another story with you
yes.
is that you were actually, we crossed paths again. And I don't know if you remember this. It was over at Universal. I was mixing a film at the Hitchcock stage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this was 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at the time you might have been doing Untitled Adam Carolla project. And you were looping.
Right.
And so you went down into the dungeon there where they do, where the looping suites are.
Right.
And I was mixing upstairs. And I think you popped into the stage, the mixing stage, you poked your head in, and I turned and I saw you. Does any of this ringing any sort of bells?
No, but
no.
Keep going.
And I just said, oh my gosh, that's Adam Carolla. And as I started to say something to you, you turned around and left. So, yeah, I didn't get, but I did, I clocked you, I saw you, and so.
I 1,000% know I didn't hear you or know it was you, otherwise I would never do that. Michael DeLorenzo.
That's right.
Who played Teddy, he was 5'10". I'm 6'10". Dude, no, that wasn't Michael DeLorenzo I stood in for. I stood in for the bad guy with the long hair. We'll find that guy.
Okay.
Anyway, a weird time is just nuts, and getting old is crazy. And I grew up, I'm looking down, I see Breakfast Club. I grew up down the street from Molly Ringwald in North Hollywood.
Sure.
So it's all this old crazy dream catcher of things that like happened or didn't happen. It's just a kind of a weird clustered dream. But
we're about the same age. I mean, I'm 56.
I will turn 55 in a few months. So we're about the same age.
We're both May. Are we both May?
I'm May 27th.
I'm the 12th.
I knew it. A
yeah.
Taurus.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got into the next
I'm a Gemini.
You're a Gemini. Okay.
I would only know you're a Taurus because my sister's is May 9th. So I did the math. The public. And so, so let's talk about that thing. So I've made some films, and I know my thing is like cameraman, AD, whoever, give me an idea. What do you got? What do you think? Sure. You think it's a good idea? Why not? You get credit for it. You wrote it. You directed it.
Exactly.
You starred in
it.
No one ever goes, whose idea was that? Like, why not just collect all the good ideas?
That's right.
It's like you're a comic and you get to steal everyone's jokes,
That's right.
But you don't have to use the bad jokes.
Right.
You can just use the good jokes and then you'll get all, your name will be on the marquee. You feel that way?
And I do. And hopefully what you've done is you've surrounded yourself with people who are smarter than you, who do bring great ideas to the table. It's sort of like a cabinet,
right,
or a CEO. You're only as good as the people you surround yourself with. So as a director, I try to get the best and the brightest that are available for the limited resources that I usually have to make independent films, which, as you, again, you know, the independent film world is you have limited resources almost always. So,
yes.
So, but if you are making films that have a social side to them, a moral side to them, I think that you're going to attract interesting individuals and people who are thoughtful and are critical thinkers, people who are walking the walk, people who are dedicated, and people who bring good ideas to the table.
Well, I've said this a lot. So I've done a lot of home improvement, remods, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
I always take people and I like walk them through my house and I go, I'm thinking about this, that, and the other. What do you think?
Sure.
And 9 times out of 10, they'll go, well, you want to put a sauna in this room, but there's a door. And then there's a door to the sun. Why don't you just take the door off and enlarge the opening? And then you could walk in and then open out. And I go, that's a good idea.
Right.
And then if someone comes to my house in 6 months, I don't have to go, that was Matt's idea. I can just
go, you take credit for it.
Nice sauna.
Sure.
So just do that with everything. And you don't have to use their idea if you don't like it.
That's right.
I don't get, like, there's a part where it's like, well, people are narcissistic and they don't want your ideas. Like, oh, no, I'm narcissistic. I want your good ideas.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes it can also backfire. So, for instance, I did a film in Spain with my father called The Way.
Mm-hmm.
And The Way was inspired by him initially. He said, I wanted this movie in Spain and I want to do it along the Camino de Santiago. And I've got this idea and I've got that idea. And so as I was writing the script, I would incorporate a lot of his ideas. And one day he comes over to my house and he says, I've got a great idea for the character. His backpack falls into a river and he jumps in and he swims after it and he gets swept up in the current and he almost drowns, but he saves the backpack. I was like, okay, that's a good idea, and we'll try to, incorporate that in the script, and thank you for your input. Well, now, here we are months later in Spain, standing at the foot of this raging river, and my dad is looking at the river and looking at the scene that was ultimately his idea, and he turns to me and he says, whose idea was this? So there's an instance where it can backfire on not only the entire crew, but the inspiration.
The movie, The Public, it's inspired by an article you read.
That's right.
It's not based on a true story, but it's inspired by an article. You've been working on this film for over 10 years?
Yeah. It originally started to 2007. It was April 1st. It was an article in the LA Times called Written Off.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an essay by a former Salt Lake City librarian named Chip Ward. Chip was retiring, and in essence, he was saying that libraries had become de facto homeless shelters, and mm-hmm. librarians had become de facto social workers and first responders. And it struck a chord with me. I thought, first of all, I was looking for a follow-up movie to Bobby. I wanted to do an ensemble film. I wanted to do it in a single location. Again, going back to you make independent films, how do you make them as inefficiently or as efficiently as possible and inexpensively as possible? And so a single location certainly helps that. So I was thinking, okay, a movie in a library, that could be interesting. Started to do the research. Spent a lot of time here in L.A. at the downtown L.A. Public Library, the downtown branch. And it was very reminiscent of what Chip Ward was talking about in this article. I began to create a story that was essentially what would it look like if the patrons who on a particularly cold night decided that they were not going to leave, that they were going to occupy the library, that they were going to actually call it a homeless shelter, an emergency homeless shelter. And what would it look like
if they did this, and how would the press react? How would the media or the politicians react? How would the police react? Would they turn it into something that it was not, which is a circus? And so I began to write that script. It was a much darker piece. It was during the very last year of the Bush administration, so it took on a much more sort of darker and diabolical tone. Obama was elected 2008, and it was, you know, we were into hope and change, and I felt like that the film or the story anyway needed to be more hopeful. It needed to be emblematic of where we were going mm-hmm. as a country, and so. So the ending changed. It became more a film about nonviolent civil disobedience than anything else.
I'm just sort of living in L.A. and thinking about the homeless situation and how insane it is and
yeah.
how it's growing everywhere in San Francisco and Santa
That's right.
Monica and blah, 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 blah.
That's right.
And it's going – if homelessness was a franchise and you got in on it
right.
10 years ago, you'd be doing better than buying Amazon
That's right.
or Nike or Apple stock. Like if it was a stock, you'd be right. rich if you got in on it 10 right. years ago. Sad comparison. And then I start thinking as you're talking, it's like we have all these, you know, there's no shelters, there's no land, there's no space, there's no housing. You think about all these libraries, but you also think about, like, I don't know, the post office, the DMV. Like, I got 12-year-old twins. I don't know that they've been in a library, a Sure. public library. Sure. I don't know that they'll ever go into a public library. I've not been in a public library in 31 years.
Sure.
I mean, when I was standing in on Judgment Night, I was living in a rent control apartment in Santa Monica, and I was going to the Santa Monica library to try to research like a new pickup truck I wanted to buy, looking Sure. at old Car and Driver magazines and pulling the stupid thing because I could only afford cars that were 8 years old. So
Right.
I had to go back 8 years
Right.
and pull the Car and Driver.
Sure.
Did the pickup truck, but that's a bygone era. There are these magnificent, big, sturdy castles all over. Mm-hmm. You know, all over LA, all over every city, every state. Again, the post office, the DMV. I don't know. Could we start sort of, you know, to me, it's like Army Corps of Engineers. Like we're in a national, like it's wartime.
Right.
Like that's the way I feel about the Right. homeless situation. This
Right.
isn't a, hey, do what you can. This is like we're at war. And we have to do what you do when you're like at war,
right.
which is sort of you need to build liberty ships. You got to fast
That's right.
track everything. Like
That's
we
right.
need to get moving.
We need a new WPA. We need to mobilize our resources to solve this problem.
And
we can. It's solvable. When you think about what it costs for an individual experiencing homelessness on the street. Per year, and we're talking about emergency services, which is called emergency EA, which is emergency assistance. It comes down to about $68,000 per individual per year. Now, if you put a roof over that
Sorry.
Same person's 68
Sorry.
Grand.
I just looked down and said Michael Weissman.
Michael Weissman.
I stood
yes.
at 4. He's 5'11".
Closer.
Look how
Closer.
Long his hair is. We're looking at a picture of the guy.
Yeah.
My hair was shorter than it is now. That's why the guy kept looking at me. But sorry, 68.
So 68 grand per
right.
individual per
right.
year. Now you put a roof over that same individual's head, it's 15 grand.
Right.
So it's still a cost, but we all pay for that.
No, I mean, of course. I mean, we do so much of that, you know, the incarceration stuff or, you know, the not investing in the young kids and then having getting on the wrong side of the law and then what it cost. I mean, it's basically like saying, look, you got to get your teeth cleaned twice a year. And they go, that's $78. I can't. It's like, okay, you know how much root canal is?
That's right.
Do you know how much it
that's
costs
right.
down the road
yeah.
if you just let it go? Pay
root
it.
Canal, implant, wherever you're going to go with that rotten tooth,
oh, right.
ultimately it's not going to get any better unless you address it.
So you've had a you tell me, and maybe I'm getting a little cathartic here, but I feel like you've done so many things and you've had so many different careers and worn so many different hats that you're not rewarded sufficiently in this town for that.
Right.
You're much better off just going, I am going to be a kick-ass stand-up, and I'll just be like Dave Chappelle, and I'll just do stand-up. I'll be Jerry Seinfeld. I'll just do stand-up, like millions and millions of dollars. Or I'll be an actor. I'll just be a director. Like, I'll just be something. And I feel it in my own career. I just feel like, oh, you're writing a book. You're doing stand-up. You're making a movie. You're making a doc. You're making a serious thing. You're making a funny thing. Nobody knows what you are. And so you get some respect, and you get some money, but you don't get... If you just stayed in one lane.
Right.
Do you feel that way?
I do. But I think that, you know, listen, I'm sitting in your studio right now, which is you're off the grid. You're doing your own thing. You are emblematic of what it means, what it looks like to be fiercely independent. And you're thriving, man. And I think that you took a calculated risk and it paid off. And that is not always the case. But I feel in many ways that I've been independent. I remain independent as a filmmaker, and I've been fortunate enough to have a certain amount of people, actors, film technicians, want to follow me on this journey. I don't know where it's leading. I honestly don't know where we're going. I'm hoping that in success, and especially in the success of the public, if we're able to land with audiences, that I'll get another shot to do this. And then I'll be able to continue to do it. But it does come with a price. You know it. When you step out of your lane, as you say, people are uncomfortable with that.
Well, I always sort of use this example, but it does hold true in every profession, which is when I used to work construction, I would be doing like a custom kitchen 1 week, and then I'd be doing some laminate work for like a display case for a convention.
Right.
And I'd be all over the road, like all over the road. Like the next week I was building storage units and underground parking for apartment buildings. Those stupid weird plywood lockers
right.
that go above your car and you slide your car, whatever. I would do everything. And at a certain point I said to the guy I was working with, Tom Johnson, I was like, if we just specialized in one thing, like if you just hang drywall, you'll make more money because you get the tools, you get the repetition, you can estimate things. You know, if you're all over the road, you don't really get paid, but you do. Who the hell wants to just hang drywall all day, every day?
That's
like
right.
It's the most boring, repetitive thing right. in the world. And it is a lot more fun to be doing some finish work over here and then raising a barn over there and then doing some custom something over here. And so while you don't get compensated, you do have this kind of freedom.
You do. And you're never sort of beholden to any one place either, because
right.
it's really about, you know, having the freedom to move around and move around the country. I mean, I believe that where we're going to see some of the most interesting and most exciting innovation is going to be in the central corridor of this country. I think you're going to see people migrating away from the coast, A, because of the cost of living, and B, because of the weather. And not that some areas of the Midwest are not experiencing extreme weather as well. However, we talked about this earlier, this idea of moving to Cincinnati. I've recently purchased an old building built in 1881. I'm in the process of restoring it. I spend 6 months of the year in Cincinnati and the other six out here. My folks are here. My kids are here. So I'm by sort of declaring yourself as independent, it does allow you a certain amount of flexibility to live wherever the heck you want to live.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about the projects, you were sort of alluding to this in the case of The Public, and again in theaters tomorrow, that'll be Friday, April 5th. It's you don't need this to be successful so you can get rich off of The Public. You need it to be successful or semi-successful so you can do your next film.
I don't think
people don't realize, whether it's a book or it's stand-up or it's a podcast or whatever it is, you need to be good enough to do the next one.
That's right.
And I think people think it's more of a do something and cash in.
Right.
It's more of a do something, have a reasonable amount of success with that thing, and then that will free you up financially and from a reputation standpoint and
that's right.
spiritually and everything else and your crew and, you know, to do the next thing.
Nothing pleases your investors more than getting a healthy or at least a reasonable ROI.
Right.
On that investment, and then they allow you to go back and do it again.
Absolutely. So you must have many irons in the fire simultaneously.
Indeed.
In a way, I guess if you're wired like you're wired, there's so many ideas, so many sound good. I started making documentaries a few years ago, and I have 1,000 ideas because sure. every idea is a good idea for you. Go, oh yeah, we got to tell that story, you know. And it's like before you know it, you're kind of treading water in your own ideas. So you have to have a process.
You do,
and yeah. the process for you is what?
So because I've been on this for so long, and I need to see it all the way to the finish line, which is the release date tomorrow and beyond. You know, I've been in the middle of a 25-city tour on this. So I will have started in San Diego, went to out to Texas to Denver, Salt Lake, back to the West Coast to San Francisco, and then back to Minneapolis. And then we ended in New York. Long, long process. So for me, I'm looking at having a bit of rest after all of this. I'm looking to sort of have a moment, whether I don't care where it is, whether it's here in LA or Cincinnati, to sort of figure out what is next. This film, The Public, it lends itself to being serialized mm-hmm. for television, and I think it could be a really interesting platform for a streaming or a cable show. And do 10 hours, 13 hours per season. So that's something that I'm flirting with. Obviously, the television world is where, you know, where anyone will tell you that's where a lot of the money is. And I think if we could get a show up and running, loosely based on the film, I think that could be the next step for me. I wouldn't be able to do it alone, though. I'd have to create a writer's room and have to get great showrunners. And again, I've not done television with the exception of directing a couple episodes of some Bruckheimer shows in the past. But TV is a whole nother animal. And so I'm interested to jump in and see what that looks like.
Yeah, I'm trying to think from making a couple independent movies. Well, so it's sort of like documentaries are the easiest because
right.
you can work on them fiercely and then like put them on a shelf for 2 months and get back to them.
That's
a kind of a, it's like a cactus garden or something. You got to tend to it a little bit, but
that's
if you're
right.
in the right climate, you can take a few days off from watering and fertilizing
right.
and tilling soil.
That's right.
The movies are like, you know, just crazy Chinese fire drill being chased by a Kodiak bear nude through a forest for 19 days straight. Like this crazy adrenaline right. rush.
It's
what
true.
Are we going to do? How do we improvise? Who fell out? What are we going to do next? And then the TV is just like a kind of a regular job. It's
right.
like it's show business, but it's like having a job. Like when we would do the Man Show, it'd be like, we'd just show up and it'd be like 22 episodes and we'd look at this cork board that had stripes in it, like episode 001, 002, and it was empty.
Sure.
It was just empty.
Sure.
And I'd just sit there and go, oh man, we got to fill up all of those things with segments. And then you just start shoveling. You just
right.
start chopping wood.
Right.
Like it's a really, there's nothing. As you know, it's like it's not glamorous or anything.
No,
it's just,
no,
just
you're in the grind.
Go to work.
You're in the grind, and I imagine you had a pretty significant writer's room during that.
Well,
period.
I got to work with Jimmy Kimmel,
sure,
who was like kind of the Tom Brady of comedy, which is like they're guys that are funny, but you don't want to work with Artie Lang. Like, where is he? He's asleep in the bathroom. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Jimmy had a work ethic. Like, he had like a Tom Brady type work ethic.
Right.
With a Cam Newton type ability,
right.
Which is a crazy combination. So that was always it's rare because usually you have the guys who have the work ethic is there because they don't have the gifts.
Right.
So they're sort of overcompensating. And then there are other guys that have the gifts, so they don't learn to work as hard. Sort of big man on campus in high school doesn't quite get that work ethic.
That's right.
Or the hot blonde doesn't always have that work ethic because things are a little too easy.
Right.
It's pretty rare that you find someone who has the gift and the work ethic. I mean, you've probably worked with some of those in your life.
Of course.
What kind of names come to mind when you think about those names?
Well, gosh, you know, when you work, and again, I've done, it's been a while, but you work with Tom Cruise, he shows up. And he is, and anybody who's ever worked with him will tell you his work ethic is unparalleled. He shows up with as if every day is game day. He's in the Olympics.
I've never met Tom Cruise. I always say this. I'm always like, he's somewhere doing push-ups right now.
Oh, for sure he is.
He doesn't have a beer cracked and he's not got his feet up. Like right. He's somewhere working right now. And think about it. I mean, you think about him as an action star leading man for 30 years.
That's right. That's right. That's not by accident.
No.
Alec Baldwin's another one who comes to mind. He, again, I've just had the great pleasure of working with him on this film. He shows up, knows his lines, knows your lines, is never late. Now, you know, I haven't seen Alec in probably 30 years before we came together on this film. And I was nervous. I didn't know which Alec Baldwin I'd be getting, but again, he's extraordinary in the film, and he's become a great friend, and he's been very supportive of the film, and he's you know, he'll pop up on my in my text stream, you know, at least once a week, saying, you know, how can I help? What's going on? How you doing? You know, is there anything more I could do for the film?
He's an intense guy. I'm friendly with him, and we have a weird relationship, which is he had a driver, and the driver, whenever he did a film, he got a driver, and it would always be the one guy, Gus. I can't remember the guy's name. But anyway, so Baldwin was like, hey, if I do a film, I get the car, I get a driver, and we don't use your driver, we use my guy. And that guy was a Loveline fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy used to record Loveline on cassettes. And so he started driving Baldwin, and he'd started like popping in the cassettes going, hey, let's check out a little. And I think Baldwin was like, what's Loveline? And
right.
He's like, listen to a tape. And before you know it, Baldwin became a big Loveline fan.
Right.
So I had this crazy experience. I've never met Alec Baldwin at this point. I've never talked to him. In my world, like, I'm a guy clean carpets in North Hollywood.
Right.
Alec Baldwin doesn't. There's no way he knows who you are.
Right.
Why would he know who you? You know who he is, but right. He doesn't know who you are.
Right.
And I was at like JFK, and I did Stern or something, and I was coming home, and I was like, had been doing Loveline for a few years or whatever, and I was like, oh, that's Alec Baldwin. Like, I could see him at the first class check-in or whatever. And I just go, that's Alec Baldwin. And the next thing you know, we're on the same flight back to L.A. And I'm like, that's Alec Baldwin. And then it's at some point, like, I get up to go to the bathroom or something, and I turn around, and like, Alec Baldwin's like standing there. And I'm like, that's Alec Baldwin. And he's right. Like, hey, man, I'm a big fan. And I'm like, what? And he's like, I am. And what are right. you doing? I said, I'm in L.A. I'm in New York. I'm doing Stern show. And he goes, he should be doing your show. And I go, what? What show? How do you know all this stuff? And then
of course,
the stories came out. And he's one of these guys, I think it's like a lot of guys in Hollywood, which is if he likes you, you're his best friend.
That's right.
But do not get on the wrong side
That's
of
right.
Alec Baldwin. He's a force.
Well, I will tell you that on this film, again, low budget independent film, he did not have a driver. He came to work in the van with the rest of the cast.
Well, also, so. I mean, I've seen him do plays and stuff in New York. Like, he's an artist. I mean, look, he's an artist. Look, he does Match Game because they pay him a shit ton of money to do Match Game.
Right.
And you can go, well, why is he doing Match Game? So he can do independent films plays and all the other NPR and all the other things that don't pay.
That's right.
I wish people sort of understood that's kind of how it's noble.
Well, also, something to also consider is that a lot of that money that he does, that he gets for doing a lot of those other shows, goes directly to charities. So he's definitely, you know, he's walking the walk.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
So,
and by the way, you know, I'm just sorry to cut you off, but, you know, I have a history with Loveline.
Yeah, that's right. You were there.
Early days when Jim Trenton and Drew
the
poor man. In fact, we open the movie Men at Work with Jim on the air doing Loveline, and we close the film with Jim on the air doing Loveline. I used to go down to KROQ and do I'd be there till 2 a.m. with he and Drew doing the show.
It was such a weird time. Mm. Like, I remember. It's just radio, by the way. That's the next doc is K-Rock, the doc. I mean,
crazy. That's right. You're directing that now.
It's crazy. Yeah. All the people that passed
Jed
through DeVish that place.
Roddy Bingham.
Bingenheimer.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jimmy Kimmel started there. Carson Daly started there. Dr. Drew started there. I started there.
Kevin and Bean.
Chris Hardwick. You know what I mean? And, like, there's so many people that just started there. It's insane. There was me and Jimmy and Chris Hardwick. We were all just there at the same time. Carson Daly. We're all just like sitting around as nobodies, just sitting around K-Rock. It was, and all the bands and all the. It's a crazy.
It's a great time.
It's a great time. It's a great story. But it's also like, I don't know if these things will ever exist anymore. Like once, Chris Penn did Loveline once when I did Loveline. I mean, Culver City, there was nothing going on in Culver City. It was a ghost town. And we finished at midnight at like on a like Wednesday night. And Chris Penn was like, I know a cop bar. Let's go have some beers. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
And it was like, just went with Chris Penn and drank some beers with some cops on a Wednesday night in Culver City. Like, you would have been scared going anywhere in Culver City back then, not the cop bar. And it was just like, I don't know. Are we ever going to have that time again?
Yeah, no. Probably not.
It's a bygone era, but God, so many interesting stories. So you're going to put your feet up after you've made the rounds with the public and regain your composure, and then is it on to the public for Netflix as a series or wherever as a series, or are there other features you have in your hip pocket?
I think it's a little bit of both. I you know, again, it there's a couple of other scripts that I've written that could be shot in Cincinnati or the surrounding areas. I'm falling in love with that state. You know, my mom's from Cincinnati. My dad's from Dayton.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel a certain connection, obviously, but I also feel comfortable there. It feels oddly familiar, even though I didn't grow up there. I was born in New York. My parents, again, born 45 minutes away from each other, and then they met in New York. We lived there till 1969 and then moved to Mexico, where my dad was cast in a film called Catch 22. After that, we decided to stay on the West Coast. We got on a train, went to Nogales, crossed the border on foot, rented a car, drove to L.A. And we've been out here ever since. I was 1969. So getting back to Cincinnati, it not only feels familiar just based on, you know, I've got familial roots there. It also feels like New York in 1969. You can buy a brownstone. You can buy a brick building. New York 1969 was a very navigable city,
right?
And we didn't have a car, so we walked everywhere. So Cincinnati for me feels very, very familiar in that respect as well.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I grew up in L.A. and there's a sort of thing when you grow up in L.A. You go, well, you can't move. You're here.
That's right.
What I mean, like you basically. You've circled all the bases and you're just born on home plate, and why would you go to another base? And then you travel around a little bit.
Yeah.
and you start like seeing life. And it also sort of feels like, in a weird way, like it's not going on if you're not there.
That's right.
And I always do. My grandfather, step grandfather, was Hungarian, so he cooked Hungarian food. So they don't have that. So I always travel on and go find the Polish food place, find the Hungarian place.
Right.
And we go to the Polish joint and we in Minneapolis and we go to the Hungarian place, right, like outside of Boston and whatever. And all of a sudden you're just in some different world.
Right.
And it's all going on. And then you start, those thoughts start to creep in your head, like, what would be so wrong with being here? And especially when you start looking at prices of real estate.
Well, you know, and I'll spend 3 months in Cincinnati and I'll fill up my car once.
Right.
Because it's a walking city. You're walking everywhere. Not only is it healthier for you, it's just, it's better for the environment. And you know, you get to actually see the city, you know, on as you're walking through it. You get to experience it.
You were talking about growing up and your dad, and your dad became a Sheen and Charlie became a Sheen and you kept the Estevez. Mm. So the... Was that decision, like, there's like a Nick Cage version of this where you go, I want to do this on my own. Mm-hmm. And then there's a, I don't know, proud of your heritage version.
That's right.
Which one for you?
I think it was more proud of the heritage. And initially, I thought about using the name Sheen. There, I had agents and some managers early days who said, hey, man, you know, it's going to be a lot easier for you if you just go with the Sheen name and ride on your dad's coattails, and you certainly don't look Latin. And bumped into the same arguments that my father did in 1958 when he decided to change his name. And the reason he did was because the Puerto Ricans were being blamed for everything.
Right.
And they said,
East
look,
Coast, you, thing,
right, East Coast, yeah. And so my dad was like, well, okay, but this is who I am. But again, the agents, the people, the other actors in his life basically said that, hey, you know, this is probably a good idea to change your name. So he did, and he was cast in a very popular play on Broadway called The Subject Was Roses, and his father came from Ohio. He's a factory worker at NCR in Dayton. Came to New York, saw the marquee, and saw my dad's name on it, and his real name is Ramon Estevez. And he looked up and he looked at the name Martin Sheen, and my grandfather just shook his head. And my dad saw that, and he was ashamed. So when my dad told me that story in 1979, he said, don't make the same mistake I did. So certainly I didn't. And now, what is it? California is 52% Hispanic surnames.
You could be governor in 10 minutes.
Right.
I mean, people like Beto O'Rourke and stuff, like people are looking to...
Right.
I mean, Antonio Villaraigosa's Tony Villar. You know, like it's
right.
Weird that people are now fighting to get that surname.
That's right. But
also,
at the time, you can imagine, though, that there was a ton of opposition.
But it's, you know, it's I think in terms of the psyche, like the wiring of human beings, and I don't know if this is like good or bad, but. Your name has always been Emilio Estevez, and I've just looked at you as like the jock guy from the Breakfast Club,
sure,
with the blue eyes. Like, he's just a white dude. Like, I never thought of you as, I don't know why, I never thought of you as any, I guess I thought of you the way you presented you or your characters or whatever it is. I never
made it a thing.
You never made it a thing. And I think because you never made it a thing, I don't feel like the audience ever made it a thing.
That's right.
Is that?
No, when you think about other names that have popped up over the years, Engelbert Humperdinck, Sylvester Stallone. I mean, these are odd names.
Well, Barack Obama.
Barack Obama.
And you never think of that as, it's just you think of him as him.
That's right.
And I think maybe there's some sort of good moral lesson in there, which is everyone just present yourself as yourself. The member of a group is probably... I think it'll serve whoever's running the group, but
that's
I don't
right.
think it'll serve you.
That's right. I never weaponized it. I think that's
right.
Yeah, it was never. I never allowed it to be weaponized.
Yeah, I had a funny. My life's always been weird because Adam is a weird non-Italian first name. So if your name's Tony Carolla or Mario Carolla, got no problem.
Right.
But I'd have people go all the time like, Adam Corolla. And then they pause and I go, what kind of name is Corolla? Right. I go, what do you mean? It's Corolla. They go like, yeah, but what? And I realized it was the Atom that kept screwing them up. Also, I changed all the time I cleaned carpets and swung a hammer, I was never mistaken for a Jew. Ever. No one, when you're cleaning carpets, no one goes, you're in the tribe, right? Oh, you're not Jewish? Like, or when you're roofing in Van Nuys. Second, right. I became a comedy writer. It's like, right. You're Jewish, you know, right? Right. It's like, I didn't change. All I did was change jobs.
Right. Right.
Same hair.
You
same,
got off the
same
roof.
Curl. I got off the roof. I put my fiddle down. Wait a minute. I fiddled on the roof. Ah, there's some connection somewhere. The Public is the name of the movie in theaters tomorrow. That is Friday, April 5th. I like when good things happen to good people. I like when guys like you are out not putting your you're not putting yourself in a group in terms of your name. You're not weaponizing your heritage, and you're out just doing projects that interest you.
That's
and
right.
Not becoming an activist or spokesperson for. You're just trying to bring art and bring product out there that you feel stories that need to be told.
And I make movies that I want to see.
That you want to see. Yeah. And I really respect it. I always root for the Emilio Estevez's of the world because we need more of them.
Thank you.
All right. The Public in theaters tomorrow. We said it.
And by the way, how was the chili?
Oh, the chili
was good.
Sorry,
yeah, so
chili.
No,
Emilio brought me chili, and it was amazing.
So I love to cook, and now you know, obviously, the weather's been a little chilly,
mm-hmm.
and I thought it's either chili or soup. And
the chili was
it's
amazing.
Pretty tasty, yeah,
it's got filet mignon in it.
But you're sleeping alone tonight. You are sleeping alone.
It'll be worth the temporary celibacy. To finish off that beautiful offering of chili. And Emilio said off the air, does anyone ever bring you chili? And I said, no, it's always gazpacho. Always. But it's nice that you broke it up. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Emilio Estevez saying mahalo. Heavy on cash, low on gash.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. A couple of screenings of Not Taco Bell material happening. Check the website, adamcarolla.com, to get your tickets. Tickets and info on all the live podcasts, Mandry events, books, movies, and the Booze and Book Club happening tomorrow night at 10 with Buck Storm. Go to adamcarolla.com and stay tuned for AP News.